This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Daniel. Now here's Pastor Sandy in Daniel chapter 5 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
Pastor was once attending a Bible study conference. He was gone for the weekend and he was absent from his church. Well, he asked his secretary to place a notice in the Sunday bulletin that would explain his absence. She meant to type, "Our pastor is away attending a study conference." But that's not what she typed. She actually typed study, but she left off the Y so that the announcement read, "Our pastor is away attending a stud conference this weekend." And to make matters worse, the remainder of what she typed read, "Please keep him in your prayers." In Daniel chapter 5, we're going to study about a stud conference. A party gone wild, complete with wine and women thrown by the Babylonian king Belshazzar. It's a party that gets out of hand and it gets interrupted by the hand of God. A blasphemous Babylonian throws a bash that the Almighty God decides to crash. As we'll see, God gets sort of a backhanded invitation to this banquet, and he makes his presence known in a most unusual way. Let's join the party already in progress. Chapter 5, verse 1. Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of the 1,000. 23 years now passed between chapters 4 and 5. Nebuchadnezzar is dead, and his throne is occupied by a grandson named Belshazzar. And for the last 20 years, Babylon has been at war with the Medes and the Persians. In fact, for the previous 2 years, the city of Babylon has been under siege. And yet, despite the onslaught, Belshazzar felt that the Babylonians were invincible. Their city was impregnable. In fact, Herodotus, a Greek historian, gives us some impressive details as to the fortifications of the ancient city of Babylon. The city was 15 miles square, surrounded by a double wall separated by a 30-foot moat. The outer wall was 311 feet high and 87 feet thick. You could line 11 cars abreast on top of the walls. The wall also had 250 watchtowers, some soaring an additional 100 feet into the sky. Even by modern standards, the walls were an impressive piece of high-rise architecture. And then under the walls flowed the Euphrates River. It provided Babylon with its own water supply. Historians report that the city had the food reserves to last 20 years. No wonder Belshazzar felt smug. He felt self-assured. And to show off his confidence, the king hosts this banquet. Now here's the scene. The enemy is outside plotting while Belshazzar and his 1,000 lords are inside partying. Incidentally, archaeologists believe they've actually found the banquet hall where Belshazzar's party was held. In the ruins of Babylon, they've discovered a room connected to the king's palace. It's 56 feet wide by 173 feet long. And across from the main entrance, in the longer wall, there was a double niche where they believe the king's throne actually sat. This long wall was covered with a white plaster, which made for the backdrop of what happens next. Well, while he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple, which had been in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. Then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken from the temple of the house of God, which had been in Jerusalem, and the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines drank from them. Now, this banquet quickly turns into a drunken orgy. Most Oriental kings didn't drink in public, and their sexual antics were restricted to their harem. But here it seems Belshazzar, he disregards all regal protocol. Apparently, he was a hard-drinking playboy. Here he is drinking with his wives and his concubines. The king's immorality was bad enough. But what tips the scales in the eyes of God is when Belshazzar brings out the vessels from the Jewish temple. You remember when his grandpa, Nebuchadnezzar, conquered Jerusalem, he took the holy vessels from the temple back to Babylon as trophies of his victory. These were the sacred saucers, the consecrated cups, the dedicated dishes. God's law commanded that the utensils used in the temple service were to be used for no other purpose than the service and worship of God. Belshazzar knew. He knew this. But in his arrogance and defiance, he deliberately defiles these holy vessels. He turns the holy vessels of the Lord into beer mugs. Imagine a party where the host uses communion trays and communion cups that he stole from the church, and he mockingly serves whiskey in the communion cups. Communion cups as shot glasses? He toasts his prostitutes with communion cups. Well, that's exactly what Belshazzar's doing. Verse 4 tells us, they drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. Secular records show that Belshazzar's father, King Nabonidus, was extremely superstitious. He had stolen the idols of the surrounding cities and he had brought them to Babel to supposedly protect him against his enemies. No doubt Belshazzar's ballroom was adorned with all these idols. And now he has the audacity to add the sacred vessels of Yahweh to his collection of worthless gods. Verse 5 tells us, in the same hour, in other words, at the very moment they put God's vessels to their polluted lips, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of that hand that wrote. Now, most of us are familiar with handwriting on the wall. It's done in crayon by our kids and our grandkids. But this handwriting on the wall is by the finger of God. Talk about immediate sobriety. That party sobers up in a hurry. The king has no need for a stiff cup of coffee. The hand of God on the wall sobered him. Think of it. In a backhanded kind of way, Belshazzar had invited God to his party. If he didn't want God to show up, he shouldn't have been toying with what God had called sacred. He should have never thumbed his nose in God's face. Now God crashes his party. Imagine the tension that would fill our room tonight if suddenly a mysterious finger wrote on the long wall on this side of the sanctuary, addressing us, a message to us specifically. It would sober up the room, would it not? Well, then the king's countenance changed, and his thoughts troubled him. God throws a wet blanket on his party so that the joints of his hips were loosened and his knees knocked against each other. Now, this is very descriptive language. The joints of his hips were loosened. That's sort of a King James way of saying it scared the stuffing out of the guy. Belshazzar's problem wasn't too many party prunes. He got some divinely inspired diarrhea. That's what happened to him. This scared him to death. His hips loosened. In addition to him soiling his breeches, we're told his knees started knocking. He's scared to death. Which brings up one of my favorite jokes. If you've heard it before, please excuse it. It just needs to be told right here at this point in the text. There once was a British Navy captain. One day his cabin boy ran to his quarters to inform him that a Spanish galleon was just off the starboard bow. The captain barked, "Fetch me my red vest and man the battle stations." Days later, the cabin boy came in again with news that two Spanish galleons were off the port side. The captain ordered, "Fetch me my red vest and sound the battle stations." One day the cabin boy, he asked the captain, he said, "Why do you always wear your red vest in the midst of a battle?" Well, the brave captain replied, he said, Sonny, he said, I wear my red vest just in case I sustain an injury in battle. I don't want my men to see me bleeding and then let a wounded captain discourage them. Well, the next day, the boy ran into the cabin. He shouted, Captain, Captain, the entire Spanish armada is just on the horizon. To which the captain replied, Sonny, fetch me my red vest and my brown pants and sound the battle stations. Well, that was Belshazzar. Verse 7, the king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. The king spoke, saying to the wise men of Babylon, whoever reads this writing and tells me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck, and he shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Now all the king's wise men came, but they could not read the writing or make known to the king its interpretation. Then King Belshazzar was greatly troubled. His countenance was changed, and his lords were astonished. The queen, because of the words of the king and his lords, came to the banquet hall. The queen spoke, saying, O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts trouble you, nor let your countenance change. Now, this queen was probably the queen mother. We're not certain, but this could have been Queen Amytis or Amytis. This was the widow of Nebuchadnezzar. Earlier in their marriage, Amytis became homesick for the green hills of the country where she had grown up. To alleviate her nostalgia for home, Nebuchadnezzar had built for her enjoyment what would become one of the seven wonders of the world, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. You've heard of it. Here the queen, though, is the only person old enough to remember Daniel. She tells King Belshazzar, there is a man in your kingdom in whom is the Spirit of God, of the Holy God. And in the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, made him chief of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. Now, Nebuchadnezzar was probably his grandfather, but since there's no word for grandpa in the Chaldean language, any male ancestor was referred to as father. He says, inasmuch as an excellent spirit, knowledge, understanding, interpreting dreams, solving riddles, and explaining enigmas were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar, now let Daniel be called. And he will give you the interpretation. Now it seems this brash Belshazzar had forced Daniel into retirement, so to speak. Didn't think he needed Daniel's godly counsel. And maybe some of your friends have retired you. Ever since you became a fanatical religious person, as they call you, they've sort of put you on the shelf. Oh, since you've become a Christian, they no longer have any use for you or your input. But that doesn't mean they won't in the future. Joseph Parker once wrote this, you will be wanted someday, Belshazzar. You have not been invited to the feast, but you will be there before it ends. The king will not ask you to drink wine, but he will ask you to tell the secret of his pain and heal the malady of his heart. Just wait your time, preachers. You are nobody now. Who cares for men of insight while the wine goes around and the feast is unfolding its tempting luxuries? But the preacher will have his opportunity. They will send for him when all other friends have failed. May he then come fearlessly, independently, asking only to be a channel through which divine communication can be addressed. Then may he speak to the listening trouble of the world. Eventually, you will be invited to the party, but not to participate in it, but to help heal the pain and the hurt that's been caused. You'll get your moment to speak into your lost friend's life. You just wait. The day will come. Well, then Daniel was brought in before the king. The king spoke and said to Daniel, are you that Daniel who is one of the captives from Judah, whom my father the king brought from Judah? Daniel was so far off Belshazzar's radar, he didn't even recognize him. The king says to Daniel, I've heard of you that the Spirit of God is in you, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom are found in you. Now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known to me its interpretation, but they could not give the interpretation of the thing. And I've heard of you, that you can give interpretations and explain enigmas. Now if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, you shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around your neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. As if worldly wealth and earthly promotion were going to motivate Daniel. Not hardly. Well, then Daniel answered and said before the king, let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. You know, remember, whenever Daniel addressed Nebuchadnezzar, he always did so respectfully. He always used the proper protocol. He would come in and say, O king, live forever. That was the proper way to greet the king. Daniel knew Nebuchadnezzar was God's instrument. In fact, he probably loved the man. But he had no such respect for Belshazzar. This was a royal punk who was not nearly as noble as his grandpa. Daniel says to him in verse 18, O king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar your father a kingdom and majesty, glory and honor. And because of the majesty that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whomever he wished, he executed. Whomever he wished, he kept alive. Whomever he wished, he set up. And whomever he wished, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne and then took his glory from him. And they took his glory from him. Then he was driven from the sons of men. His heart was made like the beasts, and his dwelling was with the wild donkeys. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God rules in the kingdom of men and appoints over it whomever he chooses. As we saw back in chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar learned some profound lessons. God humbled him. He whittled him down to size. Daniel says, but you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, although you knew all this. Belshazzar, he knew the history. He knew what had happened to Nebuchadnezzar, and yet he had deliberately ignored God's warnings. And you have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. See, it all started when Belshazzar brought out those temple vessels. He deliberately picked a fight with God. They have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives, and your concubines have drunk wine from them, and you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know, and the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. Wow. Daniel doesn't mince words, does he? Belshazzar thought he was this king, that he was sovereign. But God holds his next breath in his hands. Daniel says to the king, God owns you. You're just a puppet in his hand. Then the fingers of the hand were sent from him, and this writing was written, and this is the inscription that was written, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. Now, these are all Aramaic words. Many means numbered. Tekel means weighed. Upharsin is divided. So the message literally read, numbered, numbered, weighed, and divided. Now, here's the question. Why were the Babylonians unable to come up with an interpretation? Certainly, they knew Aramaic. We really don't know. Some Bible teachers suspect that a kind of blindness fell over the soothsayers and the astrologers so that they couldn't read it clearly. The Talmud, the Jewish Talmud, has a tradition that the letters were actually written vertically rather than horizontally, and this confused the soothsayers. We're not really sure why they couldn't read the inscription, but Daniel could read it. And he says to the king, this is the interpretation of each word. Many, God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. In modern lingo, your number is up. Belshazzar has had his opportunity to repent. And he didn't do it. Ever play a board game with one of those little timers with the sand in it? You know, it's your turn and they flip the timer over. And when that last grain of sand just sort of trickles to the bottom, whoop, time's up. Did you know we're all on a timer? Today is the day of salvation. But one day the offer will be over. Our number will be up. Verse 27, Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. The Hebrew word translated glory actually means heaviness. When stacked up against God's glory, the king lacks substance. Belshazzar is a lightweight. He comes up short in every regard. And you know, this is the case with all of us. We might be plump physically, but spiritually we're all anemic. We're gaunt. None of us match up to the glory of God, which is the standard. Only Jesus adds weight to balance our scales. And then he says, Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Perez is the singular form of the plural euphorson. And here it has a double meaning. The term literally means to divide by breaking. And Babylon will be broken that very night. It'll be conquered and divided. But the word also in Aramaic, it's the word for Persian, Perez or Persian. And it was the Persians who at that very moment were invading the city of Babylon. They were only minutes from assaulting Belshazzar's party and dethroning the king. The night was October the 12th, 539 BC. That's the date of Belshazzar's party. While he and his thousand lords were partying on the inside of the palace, outside the walls of Babylon, the Persian general, Ugubaru, had divided his army into thirds. Two-thirds were stationed where the Euphrates River flowed under the city's walls. The other third had been dispatched several miles upstream to divert the Euphrates River into a lake bed, an empty lake bed. So, as the Babylonians partied hardy, the water level of the river began to drop. It dropped lower and lower and lower as the night went on. By midnight, the riverbed had dried up enough to begin the invasion. Rather than go over the walls of Babylon, the Persians entered the city by coming under the walls through the riverbed. Because of lax security, or maybe because the guards had been bought off, the gates from the river into the city were left open, and the Persians came streaming into the city unopposed. God's judgment was fulfilled that very night. The Medes and Persians conquered the mighty city of Babylon without a battle, without even firing a shot. It's a fact of history. Today, you can go to the London Museum and you can see a cylinder known as the Steel of Cyrus, in which Cyrus, the Persian king, boasts of how he humbled Babylon. Well, verse 29 tells us, then Belshazzar gave the command, and they clothed Daniel with purple and put a chain of gold around his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. What a hollow reward. Daniel must have just laughed. In minutes, Babel would no longer be run by Babylonians. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old.
You just heard a verse-by-verse teaching from the book of Daniel on Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. Daniel and his three friends were captured and taken to Babylon. They'd lost everything, their country, their families, and even their names. Yet, amid such horrific circumstances, these young men remained steadfast in their faith. Even when it seemed like God had abandoned them, they still chose to trust that He was with them. When everyone else chose to compromise their faith by eating food that was offered to idols, Daniel and his friends refused to eat it. This small act of obedience led God to bless them greatly, as they were found to be 10 times wiser than anyone else in King Nebuchadnezzar's service. We pray that you're encouraged to be steadfast in your faith, even when it would be easier to compromise. If you have any questions or would like to know more, you can reach us at 770-736-2828. Again, that number is 770-736-2828. You can also learn more about our ministry on our website, sandyadams.org. If you're in the Atlanta area, we'd love for you to visit us at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. We have services at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next time on Sandy Adams Radio.